The party continued on Wall Street this week, with the precious metals adding to last week's impressive rally. Gold wiped away a year of losses, while the Dow picked up another 100 points. Hello, everyone. Chris Waltzik. It's just a pleasure to be back with you this weekend with another infotainment-packed, muy grande-sized show. Well, by now, most of us have heard of the CERN particle accelerator in Europe. That's where the hunt for the ever-elusive Higgs boson, that theoretical graviton, or the glue that could unify quantum physics with macro relativity. Similarly, the hunt for oversized profits continues here at Goldseek, including reports that bullion supply conditions are constrained, the U.S. Mint and the Canadian Royal Mint are unable to meet demand due in part to weekly coin quotas. Plus, the Australian Perth Mint sold a record 2.5 million silver ounces in the last reading, an all-time record. Joining me from the Goldseek Radio Cyclotron Command Center, two leading financial scientists, Louis Navalier and Peter Schiff. Louis has a solid track record of identifying multi-year themes in the market. He's well ahead of most financial pundits. He sees similarities between the 2011 downdraft in U.S. shares and 2015. You'll want to listen closely for his favorite stock sectors and several ticker symbols such as CVS, DRI, Costco, COST, Lowe's, LOW, LUV, SBUX, among others. Next, Peter Schiff and I discuss the precious metals sector, including news from major investment bank Saxo that gold may have found a solid bottom. The yellow metal could soar as high as 1,400. However, Peter Schiff thinks that figure is conservative, given the recent failure by the Fed policymakers to inch up rates. Even if gold were to decline to 800, which he doesn't see as likely, the risk-to-reward remains highly favorable. And we'd like for you to call into our toll-free hotline, 1-206-6665-370. Please jot it down or plug it right into the phone. And Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest big editorial. Goldseek.com radio begins with the market weather recap. Visibility remained virtually unlimited over the New York COMEX exchange for the third week running as investors added precious metals amid dollar weakness stemming from lackluster domestic economic numbers. Gold added 27.2%, finishing at 1183. Silver added 30 cents, about 2% as well, finishing at 1611 an ounce. The XEU Gold and Silver Equities Index ended near the break-even point, but that was no mean feat given last week's 14% advance. West Texas Intermediate crude shed a couple dollars, also some profit taking after a big move last week, ending at around $47.70 per barrel. Well, in just 2 months, gold erased all of its 2015 losses with nearly 2 months left to go in the year. Prices on Wednesday closed above the 200-day moving average, first time since May. The trend began with the Fed decision to hold rates steady at the last FOMC meeting instead of raising as expected. That against the backdrop of international risks increasing and the threat it could pose to domestic economic growth. The yellow metal blasted to the highest level in 3 months on Thursday on reports of sluggish global economic expectations. Elsewhere, holdings in gold-backed exchange-traded products increased again this week, posting the best showing since last month, up to 1,542 metric tons. That's the highest level since July, according to a Bloomberg report. And the ETFs aren't the only institutions adding the metal. The People's Bank of China added another monthly increase to its gold stockpile. Holdings increased by 15 tons. Total reserves are now 1,709. That's more than the world's largest gold ETF. On the heels of 19 additional tons in July and 16 in August, the nation is home to the fifth biggest gold reserves, with plenty of room, though, for purchases, as gold is about 1.5% of its holdings. Compare and contrast that with the U.S., which is around 73%, and Europe, which is around 67%. Plenty of room for gold purchases from the People's Bank of China, according to the World Gold Council. Adding support for the bullish case, a government report showed that core inflation moved higher this week, closer to the Fed's target of 2%. Now, although the news was viewed as somewhat bearish in the near term, I think it's significantly bullish for the longer term, because inflation obviously a big plus for gold and thus gold aficionados. In addition, U.S. industrial production fell for the second consecutive month, and we all know that deteriorating economic data lowers rate hike expectations, another plus. precious metals, bottom line. Well, in the last report, I noted signs of accumulation in the metals in the XAU. GG Gold Corp picked up another 6% last week, adding to last week's 11% gain. Agnico Eagle picked up another 1.5%. And our favorite gold company in the Alpha Stocks newsletter added 4% and I think is poised for an explosive move after nearly a year of consolidation. This candidate looks ready to rumble, so please log into your Alpha Stocks newsletter account for the ticker symbol and all the analysis. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, visibility virtually unlimited over the New York Stock Exchange this week. Investors added U.S. shares to their portfolios on sluggish global and domestic economic numbers, which were seen as lowering the likelihood of a Fed rate hike. The Dow regained the 17,000 threshold, ending at 17,216, picking up about 130 for the week, while the S&P 500 finished at 2033, up 18 points. In related news, Fed Bank of New York President William Dudley noted that policymakers could raise rates this year, agreeing with comments from last month by the Fed Chair Janet Yellen, who also wishes to see higher rates in 2015. Nevertheless, the markets discounted the comments as usual, as the Fed Funds futures revealed less than a 6% chance of a rate hike this month at the upcoming FOMC meeting, and only a 29% chance in December, which I think suggests strongly rates will remain near 0.25% well into 2016. Bottom line on Wall Street. Well, our 7-component sentiment index blasted out of the extremely fearful zone into the fearful last week and now the neutral zone. So prices in the major indices, as we'd expect, finished near the weekly highs, and the VIX index continued its 3-week plunge back below the 50 and 200 period moving averages. For the time being, the indexes have averted disaster, but the technical damage was severe enough, I think, to remain cautiously optimistic for the time being. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek. We'd like for you to stay with us right here. It's a pleasure to welcome back Louis Navalier to the show, Navalier & Associates. He's also the editor of 4 leading stock advisory newsletters.
Honored to be here.
In your latest report, we finally got another retest of the low in the S&P 500. Light volume, not always a good sign. Are you sticking with that as the bottom, or do you think we might see yet another retest?
I'm glad you brought that up. You know, we have a chart that we put on our weekly market mail that shows what the market was doing in 2011 and what it's doing this year. And it's eerily similar. And if history repeats, we'll have one more retest. And one of the reasons we think that might happen is on this market rebound, we've had a low-quality rally, a short-covering rally. We've had a lot of energy stocks bounce over 15%. We've had a lot of small-cap stocks bounce dramatically. And that's a sign that the correction is being exhausted. And in the meantime, when the leadership shifted just briefly to energy and other money-losing stocks, on the short squeeze, some of the quality stocks like the healthcare, the biotechs, and the techs are going to have good earnings because they're related to Apple. We're going to hit with profit taking. So we call this opposite bill. The current rally is not going to be sustainable, and we expect, and we've seen it broaden out a little. And so that's one way it ends. So the other way is we go back and we test the lows one last time. And so one more retest is likely. The reason we say this is the third quarter in a row of negative sales for the S&P. But the earnings are supposed to be down well over 4%. I personally think the S&P's earnings are going to be flat because I've noticed the stock buyback activity has picked up dramatically. So we're in very, very interesting times. And I can tell everyone that if they don't like all these daily shenanigans in the market, just invest the week before Thanksgiving, because that's when the happy time of year comes. That's when we gather with friends, family, football, food, and then the market should be firming up by then. The other thing is I have to apologize that a lot of the market correction was just what we call seasonal shenanigans. People aren't around in August, Europeans are gone, the New Yorkers are gone, and they succeeded this time.
I think it's a great idea, watching the market ahead of Thanksgiving. That traditionally, I mean, if you look at the Market Timers Almanac, for those maybe who were scared out of the market, presents an interesting opportunity. Moving on to the Fed, you know, we saw the Fed sit pat at the last FOMC meeting. Take a look at the 30-day Fed funds futures. They're looking at a 94 to 95% odds of holding steady on the rates at the October meeting. Do you see a Fed rate hike before the end of 2015? And if not, when do you think they finally pull the trigger?
You know, I have to be honest with you. I was going out telling everybody that never raising rates in my lifetime. People say, how long are you going to live? And I said, well, so my oldest daughter gets married, and it was in July. So I've since changed that, say that if they do raise rates, it'll be when I go in December. I think the September payroll report was a disaster. It wasn't so much it was disappointing. It was the downward revisions for July and August. The payroll report has been revised down every month this year except for June because of the double accounting of the temp jobs. Most of the jobs are creating in America are part-time. When an ambitious person gets two part-time jobs, they get counted twice. Eventually, they match up the Social Security numbers and revise the numbers down. This is not me pointing this out. This is the Fed themselves in their official FOMC minutes a few years ago. And this is why they got rid of their unemployment target. That is one reason they don't want to raise rates. Another is wages actually fell in September, and they've been very weak in recent months. And Janet Yellen, who's a labor economist, made it very clear she wants to see wage growth. Finally, they want to see inflation. We actually have deflation based on the CPI. One of the problems we have with the Fed is their forecast can't hit the broad side of the barn. They were forecasting wage growth. They were forecasting inflation. It didn't show up. So they got egg on their face, and the data-dependent Fed really doesn't want to raise rates. However, if they do, it'll be in December, one and done. We'll be distracted by the holidays. They don't want to raise rates next year, because if they raise rates, you know, the more they raise rates, the more they widen the wealth gap in America that will be debated endlessly in the presidential election year. So if they want to do it, they'll force it December 1 and done, and they'll probably cite market rates or market forces as the reason for that.
How does the potential for a government shutdown factor into your analysis?
It really doesn't, because John Boehner is still in charge. And even if he was going to be replaced, I realize that's in flux now, he didn't want to do the shutdown. They picked Paul Ryan. He doesn't want to do a shutdown. You know, it just depends who they pick. So, you know, they can pick anyone. Essentially, they don't have to have someone in the House. So if they pick Ted Cruz, I don't know if your senator can. But yeah, they might shut the government down. You know, there's a very feisty minority caucus that is causing all this chaos. Harry Reid helped make Congress more impotent, for lack of a better word, with the 60-vote rule. And the people in the House are mad. We'll see if they get a new leader, but in the end, I don't think anybody wants to shut down government.
In the past, you've talked about stock buybacks and, of course, corporate America selling bonds in order to finance much of that aggressive behavior. Do you see more of that ahead?
Absolutely. I'm a stock guy, and I have a $2 billion year bond business. Everybody wants yield. It's simple. I can get a 4.47% yield on BBB corporates, investment grade bonds out of all fees. The truth is that corporate America operates around the world, and Apple's probably the best example of this. They borrowed over in Europe for the third time in the last several months. They've sold 9-year notes at 1.4%. And then they obviously earn a lot more than 1.4. So they take all that money and buy their stock back. We've seen Biogen do this. We've seen Gilead. We've seen Alaska Airlines announce that their latest buyback. They're going to buy back over 10% of their outstanding stock. Just on the latest buyback. The leaders of this have been Lockheed Martin, AutoZone, O'Reilly Auto Parts. And the stock market is actually dying. You know, my average large cap stock retires 6.2% of its float a year. And they'll be gone in 14 years. The S&P's average stock retires almost 4% of its float. It's going to take them 22 years to disappear. So this is one of the reasons the market is going up on this light volume. It's very interesting, and it's one of the consequences of the Fed's zero interest rate policy. But the negative rates around the world are also exacerbating this situation.
That's another important part of the puzzle here, that we have coordinated efforts by central bankers around the world. Then let's use this as an opportunity to see what you're expecting in 2016. Do you see more volatility ahead, or do you see a recovery, as you point to in your latest newsletter?
We do see a recovery because the economy grew at 3.9%. The catalysts for the recovery are consumer spending and inventory rebuilding. There are soft spots in the economy like energy, but we've got some evidence of manufacturing orders starting to soften. Due to China, you know, any country that supplies China is already in a recession, like Canada, Korea, Australia, New Zealand, much of Latin America, with the exception of Mexico. So what's happening is we do think the U.S. will not go into recession. We are benefiting from the strong dollar shoving down commodity prices. That's putting more money in people's pockets, either the gas pumps. I realize we're in the winter when the fuel costs drop, but they will go up again in the spring. So this will be fleeting, but it'll help hopefully have a good holiday season. But the other thing about America is that when we have these presidential election campaigns, you cannot become elected president of the United States unless you're a positive person. So the candidates, for lack of a better word, are going to run around and suck up to everybody, and it usually lifts people's spirits, and it usually results in a very strong market. And then we elect somebody, and then we ask, why do we do that? That's another matter. Presidential election terms are traditionally good for the market, and I realize we have a lot of candidates now. We'll have fewer soon.
All right, and as we wrap up here, any particular equities on your radar screen?
Well, right now I definitely like healthcare-related stocks. CVS is the new wave of healthcare. You know, you don't go to doctors to get shots anymore. You go to your drugstore, CVS or Walgreens. CVS also does chemotherapy, not at every corner one, but they have CVS Health that's helping with outsourcing healthcare. I like a lot of the retailers are spending the getting all the consumer spending money. One would be Darden Restaurants, that's Capital Grill. Another one would be the Home Depots or Lowe's, the Target, the Costco. Those are all good examples. Southwest Airlines is another. I'm just trying to follow consumer spending. Starbucks is on the radar. They've been in low coffee prices. A lot of good things are going on right now.
Louis Navalier, we appreciate your thoughts today, and I wonder if you'd like to share any contact information, particularly with regard to your advisory newsletters.
Navalier.com is our management company site. Put our research out there free in the public domain. We want to empower people. So go to your site, empower yourself. I think you'll enjoy what you see. By the way, only 14% of the stocks out there are A-rated. So it's a very narrow market, and I'd rather you have a predominantly A-rated stock.
Louis Navalier, thank you so much.
Take care.
Great to have you back with us at GoldSeek.com Radio. Time to open up the phone line and reach into the mailbag for listeners' questions and comments.
Hi, Chris. This is Marcus calling. I'm a longtime listener, and I wanted to thank you for the great work you do on your show. It really provides valuable insight. I wanted to let you know about a service that I use that I thought you and other listeners would be interested in. Anyone that's perhaps done some preparation at home to plan for emergency preparedness, maybe put aside some food and water, that type of thing. There's a group of ex-military men, Green Berets, who are really quite exceptional, and they've developed a consulting firm called the Yarborough Group. They'll come into your house and interview you and your family, basically give you a grade in terms of what kind of preparations you've done and if they're adequate or not. They can help you with everything from a fire evacuation plan for you and your children to a survival plan in case communications go down and you need to meet up so that you have a plan in place. So I really think it's an invaluable service. They can be reached at yarboroughgroup.com. It's yarboroughgh-group.com. Thanks, Chris.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
James Turk, founder of GoldMoney.com, author of The Coming Collapse of the Dollar and How to Profit from It.
Yeah, hi, Chris. Good to be with you.
Start off today with the dollar rally. Since we last talked, it continued even higher. Quite a remarkable rally over a nine-month period, erasing 12 years of losses. But some of our guests here on the show are convinced that this is just a final hurrah, if you will, before an ultimate day of reckoning for the greenback. Any thoughts on what that might mean for investors?
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, the fundamental underlying factors for the dollar have not really changed for the better. There's still too much debt. There's still too much government spending. What we've seen is that with interest rates in Europe moving below zero, interest rates in the United States that are still basically above zero make the dollar look like a good alternative. So in that sense, it's an emotional knee-jerk reaction, hot money moving into the dollar and driving it higher relative to the euro and some of the other currencies that have negative interest rates. But, you know, underlying factors still suggest that the U.S. hasn't come to grips with its basic problems. You know, too much government spending, too much debt, too much printing by the money printing by the Federal Reserve. It's causing, you know, problems for the dollar, and, you know, eventually those problems will be realized.
Exactly. It just seems to be the least bad alternative, I guess, around, and money flowing in, it really props up our equities and bond markets. But probably if we saw the big picture, maybe a chart of all the currencies in the world, the long-term downtrend in fiat money would be evident, don't you suspect?
Yeah, clearly. And in fact, if you look at gold versus all of the major currencies of the world, you know, gold is basically up against all of them with the exception of the U.S. dollar, where it's, you know, down a little bit. But, you know, gold is up 10% this year against the euro, for example.
Since you're closer than the rest of us, or most of us here, to the Eurozone drama, the Grexit and so many of the issues facing or plaguing the region, do you see this eventually escalating?
Yeah, you know, there's no doubt there are people looking for safe havens. You see it in a lot of different places, a lot of different ways. Housing prices in London, Singapore, and other safe havens are rising. A lot of money is going into collectibles and other forms of tangibles. And money's coming out of a weak spot. There's been a decline in bank deposits in Greece, for example. That money's been coming out of Greece and looking for safe havens. And as a consequence of, you know, these monetary problems that we have in Europe, you know, again, similar to the problems in the United States, over-leveraged governments, too much government spending, not enough wealth creation to service all of these debt obligations, it's going to come to a head. You know, when it's going to happen is always difficult to get an exact timing. But so many trends coming together now, Chris, to me, it seems like you can see a lot of volatility coming, you know, pretty soon.
You mentioned recently that the European Central Bank will expropriate deposits in Greek bank accounts to help cover those loans that the bank has made to their government. And I wonder if you could give us an idea of how this aspect of the story could impact the markets.
The European Central Bank did that in Cyprus. They've said that's going to be the blueprint for other countries in Europe that get into trouble. And, you know, Greece is clearly into trouble. So we will see if the European Central Bank will repeat the Cyprus experience again and take away bank deposits from bank depositors after the Greek or after the, you know, the government nationalizes the banks in that country. What it's basically doing, you know, these types of events is they undermine confidence in fiat currency. And fiat currency rests on nothing but confidence. If that confidence disappears, you end up getting what's called a flight from the currency. You know, the demand for that currency declines because of the perceived problems or the monetary illnesses that are affecting that currency. And as a consequence, it loses purchasing power. And it tends to happen over a fairly short period of time, as we've seen really just over the past several months with regard to the euro and how much it's dropped compared to the dollar and even some of the non-euro European currencies like the British pound.
An interesting article from Zero Hedge noted that the New York Fed stockpile of the yellow metal actually dropped below 6,000 tons for the first time in over 100 years. Could the New York Fed and some of its compatriots attempt to manipulate the markets by selling off their stockpile?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is indeed the case. You know, you can keep a lid on the gold price for a certain extent. We saw how this happened in the 1960s, for example, during the London gold pool, where this cartel of central banks got together to keep the gold price at $35 an ounce, even though the market knew that gold was worth more than $35 an ounce. So basically, that was forcing the central banks to keep feeding physical metal into the market at that $35 an ounce price to try to keep that lid on it. But eventually, the central banks had enough. They threw in the towel and they let the gold price rise. It's basically the same thing this time around, though obviously at a much higher price. Metals coming out of the Federal Reserve in New York as an indication of how tight physical metal, physical gold is here in London. And there's no doubt in my mind that the metal is coming out of New York in order to help satisfy the strong physical demand for metal that we're seeing pretty much all over the world, but particularly in Asia, which continues to acquire, you know, huge amounts of physical metal. And, you know, China particularly has become now the largest buyer of physical metal every year.
Ambrose Evans Pritchard published, I thought, a rather interesting article that the U.S. might be making a huge blunder by treating China, our neighbor, as an economic foe, at least allegedly importing a huge, many, many tons per day of gold. And it seems as though we might be setting ourselves up for just a strategic error here. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I do agree that it is a strategic error. You know, China is, depending on who you're measuring, who's measuring it and what time of the week it's being measured, China is either the largest or the second largest economy in the world. It's looking for stature. It's looking for respect in the community of nations. And it's looking for ways to exercise its power. And it's being thwarted of doing that within institutions created by the United States after the Second World War, like the IMF, World Bank, and things like that. So it's not surprising that China is out there creating its own institutions, most recently being the Asia Infrastructure Investment Bank, AIIB, where the U.S. was saying to its allies, you know, don't join it because, you know, America wanted to keep its influence in the prime position. But, if, you know, everybody's recognized the writing on the wall that there's a lot of economic activity, a lot of growth potential in China, and a lot of nations around the world have joined that AIIB, despite the fact that the U.S. had asked them not to. You know, as the dominant monetary power after the Second World War, you know, under what's called the Bretton Woods Agreement, and thereafter under this floating currency regime that governments have been following, the U.S. government has this responsibility to the rest of the world to maintain a currency that can be used effectively in international trade. And it's a currency that, like the British pound under the classical gold standard when the British Empire was reigning supreme, it would preserve purchasing power and could be used under a constant rule of law as a neutral tool in commerce. Well, the U.S. government has moved away from that in recent decades and now is using the dollar more as a political weapon rather than a neutral, allowing it to circulate as a neutral tool in commerce. And they're also looking at domestic political considerations rather than geopolitical and geomonetary situations when from the dollar's role internationally. And that's causing a lot of feedback, and it's impairing the dollar's role. And that ultimately, I think, will decrease the demand for the dollar. And I think is likely to be one of the reasons why the dollar will be heading south as we move toward the end of this year.
Add to your comments, your earlier comments regarding China's appetite for the yellow metal. India is now trying desperately to compete with China's voracious appetite, according to Bullion Star, exploding imports. The race seems to be on to insulate from what they probably perceive as profligacy on an epic scale.
Yeah, well, I think this is going to be an interesting year as we move toward the end of the year. We have a lot of events coming up over the next several months, particularly September, October, November, when the IMF is meeting to determine the reweighting of the special drawing right, the SDR. And we'll see whether or not China is included in the new reweighting of the SDR. If it's not included or if China's not happy with the way it's been treated, I think that could have a profound effect on the global monetary system, which I'm basically thinking would be very bullish for gold and very negative for the U.S. dollar.
If you could tell folks a bit more about goldmoney.com.
Yeah, I'm the founder of Gold Money. We're an online company, goldmoney.com. Very convenient, economical, and safe way to buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and to have that metal stored for you in a number of different vaults around the world to give you a geographic diversification of your precious metal portfolio.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chris.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Well, Mr. John Williams, head of ShadowStats, an alternative economic resource that's widely acclaimed by many of the folks in the gold community in the mainline media.
Thanks for having me, Chris. We've had some extraordinary distortions in the markets in the last year, particularly since June of 2014. At that point in time, because of the situation in the Ukraine, we saw some actions taken by the U.S., some overtly against the Russian leaders and covertly in the area of trying to knock down oil prices and strengthen the dollar in an effort to create financial stress for Russia. And we were successful in doing that, but that threw off a lot of factors from what I would have expected. Very simply, where the dollar was played up, where the markets picked up on it, was very much along the lines of the U.S. economy's booming along now, and the Federal Reserve is going to take a more normal monetary policy. They'll start raising interest rates, and all that was used to help rally the dollar. Problem is, the economy never recovered from the big downturn that we had started in 2007 into 2008 into 2009. Worst contraction since the Great Depression. That's official. I'll contend, though, that we did not recover, as the official numbers show, starting in the middle of 2009. If you go by the official GDP numbers, the broadest measure that the government publishes on the economy. Mid-2009, the economy began recovering, and by early 2011 had exceeded where it was before the recession. It's just continued growing ever since. You don't see that in any other series. And I'll contend that the underlying reality has been one of a plunge into 2008, 2009, and then basically a period of protracted stagnation. There have been some series that have started to climb, but they have not recovered. So coming into the end of this last year, all of a sudden we're seeing booming GDP reporting, the strongest economic growth in over a decade, which again was not the common experience. You have pockets of weakness and strength, but largely weakness still around the country. What's kept all of this from really becoming a boom, as I'm sure everyone would like to see, has been the consumer. Consumer generally has been strapped for liquidity. Income is not growing, net of inflation. That credit's tough to come by. That's one way you could get beyond not having a real growth in income, inflation-adjusted income. Consumer confidence, you hear all the headlines there about how it's recovered, but still, historically, it's at levels that you normally see in a recession. We don't have a recovery with the consumer. If the consumer doesn't have real growth in income, I'm talking here adjusted for inflation, there's no way you can have sustained growth in consumption, again, shy of the debt growth, which is also restricted at this point. And that's more than 70% of the economy. It's also hitting the still the housing market. So all these numbers that we saw last year, towards the end of the year, were just nonsense in terms of what was being reported. There are a number of ways or a number of things that explain that. What you could have expected, indeed what happened, even the official numbers started to turn down in the last several months, enough so that market sentiment is beginning to shift towards the economy certainly being weak in the first quarter. It certainly has been so far in terms of the reporting, and I've been contending that would happen. But even more so that this will be the onset of what will be recognized as a new recession. That's not a circumstance in which the Fed is going to continue to ease, continue to tighten, to move away from easing. And it's the expectation that the Fed would tighten that has probably been the biggest factor behind the strength in the U.S. dollar and in the global markets, that and the expectations of continued economic growth. These economies slowed. We've seen expectations shift on the Fed. You've seen some weakness in the dollar. We still have a long ways to go before we get back to where we were last June. But some in substance, I think the corner's been turned in terms of the mania that we almost had coming into the this year. Again, as the dollar strengthened, it tended to also weaken gold and silver. As we see the economy turn into recession, which still is not broadly anticipated, you'll find the pattern here will accelerate. You'll see greater downturn in the dollar, which in turn will be more inflationary, tend to push oil prices back up. It'll pressure gold and silver prices to the upside. And it's the reversal of what I would refer to as a market craziness of the last 8 months or so that we have ahead of us in the next several months. So that I would see that generally as a time where you're going to see some recovery in the price of gold. And as a circumstance for the Fed that is just impossible, because what happened here with the central banks, and not just the Fed, but the rest of the world, but the Fed leading the pack, was that in the crisis of 2008, the panic of 2008, they were faced with a collapse of the banking system, and they did anything they had to do to keep the system from collapsing. The problem, they did nothing that fundamentally improved things. All they did was they pushed the problems into the future. And now we're in that future. They don't have the options they had back in 2008. It's going to get very difficult. I look for a still a panic decline here in the dollar that will be coming along. I can't tell you just when it's going to happen. The timing on something like a panic is somewhat irrational in nature, but everything's in place. And as the more of a sell-off you see in the dollar, the more of a pickup you're going to see in domestic inflation. And that, in turn, is going to become a runaway inflation as the rest of the world begins to not just sell the dollar, but to dump the dollar. Again, this is in the context of all that's happened since 2008. The crisis ahead is going to be extremely difficult. It's going to lead to very high inflation and hyperinflation down the road here, so that it's an environment where the individual needs to look at preserving his or her wealth and assets in terms of purchasing power. The best bet on that is holding physical gold and silver that provides you with a store of wealth that rides through the difficult times. And as you come out on the other side, it also is liquid and will tend to preserve the purchasing power of the assets that were put into the gold and the silver.
You know, this idea of inflation, deflation, there's considerable debate. It seems like every time the dollar goes up and commodities sag, the deflationists win the argument, and when the contrary happens, vice versa. What they're interpreting to be deflation might just be disinflation or slowing of the inflation rate temporarily.
Look back at the money supply and the... You get into the notional value of the derivatives. It's pretty difficult to put a hard number as to how it would play out, because the normally the exposures are a lot smaller than the notional value. You have a system where the government could intervene and basically freeze the system and prevent some of the collapse that would come with that if you had major defaults, which would then expose people to the notional value in terms of a liability or conceivably an asset. I don't see that. I mean, there are going to be a lot of problems there, but the big issue is going to be the collapse in the dollar. And with that, as the dollar becomes worthless, the rest of it doesn't make much difference, because there's no a hyperinflation. What might be worth $1 trillion today could be, in terms of purchasing power, worth $100.
What about for our listeners who might be scratching their heads saying, but haven't we just seen the greenback erase losses in the blink of an eye? That would seem to indicate underlying strength. You view this as an anomaly, then?
Well, it's a canard. The dollar has been in general decline, and to a certain extent, a matter of a direct policy of the U.S. government and the Federal Reserve over decades. I mean, if you go back to 1970, I think you'll find that the dollar has lost in excess of 90% of its value against the Swiss franc, for example. We have seen some rally all since June of last year. Otherwise, we're pretty much at all-time lows, and that took us to multi-year highs. But I think that was largely an artifact of what was being done to, try and damage the Soviets, and maybe Russia. At the same time, perhaps trying to give some troubled European systems a little bit of a...
Peter Schiff, chairman of Schiff Gold, located at schiffgold.com, author of several bestsellers and a radio host. Welcome back, Peter Schiff.
Thanks for having me back on. It's a good day to be talking gold.
It is a good day, isn't it? And you know, one top market watcher recently in the blogosphere is calling for gold as high as $1,400 an ounce, citing all different factors, including the Denmark Saxo Bank, which is saying they're seeing a change in sentiment and that a floor in the gold metal appears to be in place. What do you think?
Well, it looks pretty compelling. You know, the recent pullback to around 1150, which was support, which was resistance rather for a while, as gold was kind of trading between 1100 and 1140-ish. When we tried to get back down below 1150, they couldn't push it down the other day. We're now trading closer to 1180. Last I looked, it's just over 1177. This is the highest gold has been in a few months. Silver now decisively above the $16 level. That's a little breakout. The dollar is breaking down as gold is breaking out. We're continuing to get bombarded with negative economic news. The trifecta again today. And in fact, the Walmart news, I think, is a lot worse than it's being portrayed. I mean, this stock is collapsing. It's at a four-year low. Stock's down 33% from its 52-week high. This is America's biggest retailer. This is a company that benefits most from a strong dollar and cheap oil prices, yet it can't survive in this phony recovery. We are headed back to recession. I mean, I dare the Fed to raise interest rates. I mean, it's so ridiculous that people still believe their bluff. But the question is, how much longer is the Fed going to get away with pretending that they're about to raise interest rates and actually fessing up that their real plan is QE4? And you talk about $1,400 gold. That's nothing compared to where gold's going to go when people figure out that the Fed has been lying the whole time.
Yeah, no, I think the Walmart situation, you know, the CEO cites excessive wages as a primary cause for their stock drop.
Remember, they just bowed down to a lot of pressure to raise their wages. And so this is going to be a very hollow victory for the left, right? Because they hate all the low-paying Walmart jobs. So now Walmart's going to eliminate a lot of those low-paying jobs. But that just means we're going to have a lot more unemployed people. Because now that their profits are plunging, the layoffs are going to have to begin.
Okay, very good. Let's move on to the Federal Reserve. They're not in any hurry to raise rates this year. And it doesn't look like they're so anxious to raise rates as soon as early next year.
They can't raise rates. I mean, not unless they're willing to prick their own bubble, which they're clearly not. So the whole game the Fed has been playing is to pretend they were going to raise rates so they can pretend the economy was strong enough to withstand the higher rates, but knowing the entire time they couldn't do it, which is why they never did. The question is, when are people going to figure this thing out? You know, and is the Fed going to get away with pretending that they called off the rate increases because the weakness in the overseas economies unexpectedly spilled over to us? Because that's going to be their excuse, but that's not the reason. The reason they didn't raise rates is because they never intended to raise them in the first place. They're talking about bringing them to a negative below zero.
I mean, there is a lot of talk across the board in central banks around the world that we could see negative rates, which we already saw briefly in the Eurozone.
You know, the Great Recession started with interest rates at 5%. So, you know, they had plenty of room to lower them before they did QE. But if this greater recession is about to start and rates are at zero at the beginning, well, then what's the encore, right? What are they going to do? So, I mean, negative rates might be the only thing that they could think of.
Tight supply conditions in the precious metals. I mean, we're reading there is an unprecedentedly low amount of silver bullion around, forcing some mints to even ration sales, increase overtime, and send U.S. buyers around the world to, you know, new locations and whatnot online just to get their orders filled. For instance, the U.S. Mint setting weekly sales quotas for its American Silver Eagle. That is becoming the norm now. The Canadian Mint is also following suit, as well as the Australian Perth Mint, which sold a record of 2.5 million ounces this month alone.
You know, there's real demand out there for precious metals. I mean, you have to separate the speculative demand from the hedge fund community and the highly leveraged traders who really are just making bets and just are, you know, trying to play around with other people's money. And then you've got the real buyers. Like our clients at Shift Gold, who buy gold and silver, they put it away. I mean, they're not buying it to speculate on what it's going to be worth next week or next month. They want to protect their long-term purchasing power. And those buyers are around all over the world. I mean, there are people all around the world that don't trust paper money for good reason, and rather than putting their money in a bank and getting no interest and risking a bail-in or something, they take their money and they turn it into gold or silver and they hold on to it. And as more and more people want to do this, we're running out of physical supply. You know, what's really going to cause the market to skyrocket is when the speculators decide that they want to buy back the silver and gold that they sold that they don't even own. And this is when you're going to see an explosion to the upside. Right now, speculators are keeping a lid on prices, and that's a great deal for the real investors who want to buy. But the problem is we're running out of actual gold and silver for people to buy, because the stuff that they're selling on Wall Street, my clients can't take delivery of that. That's just on paper. They want the real stuff. That has to come out of a mine. They have to take it out of the ground. They have to fabricate it. They have to ship it. This shows you where the real market is headed, as opposed to where the speculators think it's headed. But once the speculators figure out they got it wrong, look out. Right? This is going to be an explosive move up.
No, exactly. I think there's another component to this story. Sure, we've got the speculation, but then on the other side, there's the wealth preservation aspects. And this has sort of been, I think, tossed into the corner over the last 6-7 years during this record equities rally in the housing, the echo bubble, if you will, recovery. What happens when that fear re-enters the precious metals markets?
People have been fearful of higher interest rates. They've been fearful of a strong dollar. And that, you know, is scared people out of the gold market. Wait till they realize that what they really have to fear is quantitative easing for more 0% interest rates. That's what's going to happen. Walmart stock is down 33% from its 52-week high. I mean, that is a huge move. I mean, we go down another 20%, this stock is lower than it was 10 years ago. This is the nation's biggest retailer. And if our economy is driven by consumer spending, and consumers do most of their spending at Walmart, and Walmart is collapsing.
It doesn't look like there's a black swan on the horizon. You know, I see a whole flock of black swans looking for a place to land. You know, doesn't that really summarize just how integral gold and silver are going to be to every investor's portfolio?
Yeah, and the most ironic thing about it is how few people own any gold at all. You know, even when you talk about it, I mean, I talk about people having 5 to 10% in gold, and they look at me like, why? Just even having any. To me, I mean, I'd rather have all my money in gold than none of my money in gold. But, you know, to advocate having gold as part of a portfolio, but, you know, it's comforting as the smartest people in the world are saying the same thing. You know, yet they feel perfectly confident owning U.S. treasuries or junk bonds or inflated, social media stocks.
The Argentine peso revalued something like close to 100-120% against gold in the blink of an eye. Very similar thing occurred, you know, with the ruble recently. You add that up. But then, you know, we still haven't touched on another, I think, important aspect that just doesn't get any play because it doesn't seem very relevant, I think, in this modern interconnected world. There is some interesting legislation that's gone on the books in North America as well as in the EU that indicates that your dollars, as soon as you send them into any lending or financial institution, are no longer yours. They're rehypothecated, whether you've signed off on that or not, or whether you've read the fine print or not. It's no longer your funds, it's their funds, to do with what they want to. According to this latest article, shtf.com, that could indicate that the FDIC no longer has any responsibility for our funds.
Oh, yeah. And look, we're very close to a breakdown in the dollar index, and this thing could free fall. Because remember, the entire bullish case for the dollar was built on the foundation of higher rates. And not just like a one and done, like the Fed raises interest rates 25 bips and then stops, but an entire tightening cycle was built into the dollar. And all of a sudden, when you take that support away, people find out that, wait a minute, the Fed is just about to embark on another round of QE. We're nowhere near rate hikes. The bottom's going to drop out quickly. Gold prices are going to pick up. And then I think you mentioned about the shortage. Look, we can have huge shortages of physical metal, which means that, you know, let's say the price of gold goes up to $1,300, but there's no physical supply, and we have to mark up our coins 10% above spot or something because there's just so much demand and not enough supply. So, you know, if you're thinking about buying more gold or silver, I would hurry up and do it, because not only might you see higher prices in the immediate future, but you can see much higher premiums to actually get the physical gold. So I would get it now before that situation, gets even more dire.
Exactly. And what is your real risk on the downside? So even if it were to drop, let's say, from around $1,100 to $800, you might be risking in the neighborhood of 20-25% on your investment, whereas virtually everywhere else, you're risking as much as 100%.
I think, though, the odds of gold going to 800 are so slim, because they couldn't even get gold below 1,000 when everybody thought the Fed was about to raise rates. Now that most people think now they're not going to raise rates, why would gold go down now? So I think your downside now is really limited. I doubt we'll see gold back below 1,100 if it even can get below 1,150.
I think you're approaching fire sale levels. Ask yourself, what's your risk to reward ratio here? And of course, if you can't stomach the margin, then don't get involved in the margin. And anything you have can be rehypothecated without your consent. Is 2016 going to be the year for the precious metals bulls?
Well, you know, it's been a long time in coming, and certainly it's starting to look that way. Right. It's certainly looked that 2015 is going to finish strong, and everybody was looking for gold to be down in 2015, and it's probably going to finish 2015 in the black, and that might not even be the case for the stock market. There's a good chance that Dow Jones is going to end the year lower than it began. The gold, that brick, that paperweight, will probably outperform the U.S. stock market in 2015, but then it's going to leave it in the dust, I think, in 2016, because we have so much catching up to do. And I think what's going to surprise the heck out of people is how fast the price of gold goes up. You know, because I think it's going to go up a lot faster than it went down, because it's really reflecting the movement in the dollar, which is going to go down a lot quicker than it went up. And that's the case. This dollar rally has been slowly building for years, and it's going to evaporate in months. And the flip side of that is going to be the rise in the price of gold.
And get as many of those paperweights as possible. As we wrap up here, I know that you follow the real estate markets. You're one of our few guests who really has his finger on the pulse of the real estate sector and housing. So I'd like to know what you make of Wells Fargo's latest mortgage application number. You know, they're showing almost 40%. That's the biggest percentage drop since 2009. You're talking almost 6 years.
Because what happened was the government was changing some rules. And so everybody was rushing to get their applications in prior to the rule change, so that we've just pulled forward a bunch of mortgages. But I do think that the housing market is in trouble. I think this is another bubble, you know, where they have reflated the same bubble, but it's different in that, you know, the home ownership rate is the lowest it's been in almost 50 years, because a lot of Americans were wiped out in the last bubble, and so now they're renting from the hedge funds that bought their houses out from under them. But, you know, if you look at affordability, houses have never been so unaffordable in America, and that's despite 3.5% guaranteed down payments by the government and artificially low interest rates. So the housing market has a long way to fall. I think the Fed wants to prevent that from happening, and the only way to do that is to keep printing money, and unfortunately that's what they're going to do, and they may stop real estate prices from collapsing, but they will cause gold prices to surge. And so in terms of gold, right, real estate is really going to get killed. I mean, yes, the Fed can stop house prices from going down in dollars, because they can print dollars faster than you build houses, but they can't stop the price of houses plunging in terms of gold. So I think rather than buying a house right now, people should buy more gold. And in 5 years, you'll be able to buy a lot of house, a few ounces of your gold.
With all of the hedge funds and institutions buying up foreclosures and the rest of the last 5, 6, 7 years, I mean, that inventory at some point, pseudo shadow inventory, I mean, it's going to hit the market.
Oh, yeah. Who are these hedge funds going to sell to when their investors need their money back? And they say, well, all your money is tied up in these houses. Well, sell them. Well, sell them to who? You know, the initial idea behind these, you know, funds was buy up the houses when they're cheap, and then the exit strategy was turn around and sell them back to the renters. Well, the renters are broke. The renters can barely afford to rent down payment on a mortgage to buy the property. So I think this is going to be a disaster for these private equity guys, and it's going to obliterate the housing market, because this is a big deal. When the housing market went down before, everybody had mortgages. So when you were underwater on your mortgage, you really couldn't sell. You needed permission from the bank to do a short sale. And so a lot of houses didn't get sold. But these hedge funds don't have any mortgages. So there's nothing to prevent them from selling. And, you know, these guys are used to taking a loss on a trade. You know, you buy a stock, it's down 20 or 30%, it doesn't work out, you blow out of it and go on to something else. So they're going to think nothing of selling these houses for 20, 30% losses. So they're going to obliterate the market. And they don't even live in the houses. You know, if you live in your house, you know, you're maybe not as likely to sell it, because now you got to move. But if you don't even live in the house, if you just bought it like a stock, you just bought it as an investment, and if it turns out it didn't work out, well, just cut and run. So this market could see selling like we've never seen, and I think that scares the daylights out of the Fed, which is, you know, why the last thing on its mind is a rate hike.
Because don't you see, we see the housing market priced for perfection, and we have the precious metals market priced for utter destruction as a result of interest rates. But I think what's happened is the markets, and I don't like to say this, may have it wrong to discount gold to nothing and housing to perfection when they both hinge so heavily on interest rates, and that's the Achilles heel. The FOMC goes all in on rates. You're going to see a bottom in precious metals, and you'll see housing roll over for good.
Yeah, and where you can really see it more is in the housing, not the gold stocks. I mean, that's where they've discounted it to ridiculous levels. You know, look at these gold stocks. I mean, you can buy gold stocks today for half of what they were trading for 15 years ago when gold was at $275 an ounce. It's now at $1,175 an ounce. So that's how ridiculous Wall Street is. So that's where the real bargains are. You know, we also, in addition to physical gold that we sell at Europe Pacific Gold, we also deal in gold stocks. I think you've got some incredible buys. I also manage a fund with Adrian Day, the Europe Pacific Gold Fund, which I think is a great way people could participate in this bull market in gold stocks, so people can, you know, get a prospectus and make sure they understand all the risks, you know, inherent to investing in gold stocks. But there's also some tremendous opportunity right now because these stocks are so cheap, in my opinion, that if you really want to speculate on something, I can't think of a better speculation than gold mining stocks.
Well, didn't we just find that out last week with the XAU up 14% in 1 week? And you're talking about the majors. We saw GG, Newmont, Goldcorp all up 10-11%, you know, in just 1 week.
Goldcorp is up 7.5% today. You know, and it's still, the day is only half over. But this is not even a big move. I think when gold really takes off, in fact, I looked at this chart, for gold to get back to where it was at its low point 2 years ago, right, the lowest point it hit 2 years ago, gold only has to rally 7.5% or so to get back to that low level. But gold stocks have to rally over 50% from here, right, to get back to their low point from 2 years ago, their low point. Like, not like, you know, their high point, the lowest they got. That's how cheap these stocks are. Think about that. Potential 7% rise in the price of gold, 50% or more rise in the price of gold stocks. I mean, talk about leverage. You know, that's, you don't even have to borrow money. You just buy the stocks for cash, but you've got so much built-in, you know, leverage to the price of gold because nobody believes this rally. And even though we've had this significant rally, these stock prices, these gold stock prices really don't reflect it at all, because nobody believes it yet. Everybody is standing there in disbelief. You know, they're like, you know, like the deer in the headlight. They just want to believe what's about to happen. But that's, I think, the position of the guys who are short these gold stocks.
Okay, so as we wrap up here today, give folks an idea more about the services you provided, Shift Gold and related websites, and any other services you'd like to share with us, please.
Well, Shift Gold is my precious metals company. If you want to get physical gold and silver before we run out, you know, go to shiftgold.com or call one of the representatives and get your physical gold and silver. And we market up. We have some of the lowest prices that you'll find, even on the internet, where there's no human interaction. We have actual people that will help you, and we're cheaper than most online gold and silver dealers. So Shift Gold. And then, again, if you want to take advantage of mining stocks and foreign stocks in general, just to get out of the dollar, you don't have to have everything in gold stocks. You want to diversify. You want to own other stocks in Switzerland and Singapore and New Zealand, some of my favorite countries to invest in. Talk to the brokers at Euro Pacific Capital. It's europac.com, europac.com. And then don't forget to follow me on Twitter and YouTube and Facebook, and listen to my video blogs at Shift Radio and my podcast, rather, on Shift Radio. In fact, I'm going to be doing another podcast later today, so look out for that, you know, Shift Radio, and also my video blogs on my YouTube channel. There's a lot of stuff. My books are out there. My most recent one, again, The Real Crash, America's Coming Bankruptcy, How to Save Yourself and Your Country. We've got a revised edition with over 100 new pages. So you can pick that up on Amazon or at my bookstore. We have a bookstore at Shift Radio.
Peter Schiff, thanks so much. We'll look forward to having you back on the show.
Hey, anytime. Have a good day.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of Gold Seek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
Gold Seek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Hey Chris, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Sometimes you just have to take in stride the audacity and in-your-face bluff of the linguistic terminology used to both sell and cancel out objections of official Fed policy when presented in sound bites and headlines. Federal Reserve Chairman Stanley Fischer recently commented that a 2015 U.S. rate rise is an expectation and not a commitment. In other words, it is and it isn't at the same time. Drilling down, what he's really saying is that nothing that is implied as imminent, like raising interest rates, is factual. It's just a head game and a perpetual head fake of implications. At an IMF meeting in Peru, Fischer commented that both the timing of the first rate increase and any subsequent adjustments to the federal funds rate target will depend critically on future developments in the economy, and that what he called considerable uncertainties surrounded the U.S. economy, which include a decline in exports from slowing global growth, less investment from low oil prices, and the recent drop in U.S. job growth. And here's where the artful doublespeak continues. On one hand, Fischer said the U.S. economy was generating enough jobs to make progress towards the Fed's goal of maximum employment, and inflation would eventually rise. He suggested the Fed should be able to maintain an initial rate hike expected in October or December. But on the other hand, Fischer indicated the U.S. is more exposed now to international events and global developments in China and other countries, which influenced the Fed to delay September's rate increase. I can guarantee you the expected October and December rate hikes will be non-existent as well. This artful game of doublespeak, where something is and isn't at the same time, has now been adopted by Republican candidate Donald Trump, who has suggested interest rates should be higher, but also stated there would be dire consequences when they are raised. Donald is missing the point. They cannot raise interest rates with the current debt, under the current system, without killing that system and most within it. He knows most either don't understand or acknowledge that critical point, which allows him to make a political argument that will bypass the critical awareness of those who prefer political pandering to economic fact, when he says things like, Janet Yellen, for political reasons, is keeping the interest rate so low that the next guy or person who takes over as president could have a real problem. Trump went on to say they are trying to put the next recession, it could be a beauty, into the next administration, and that's not fair. What's not fair are the continual lies, misrepresentations, sophisticated doublespeak, and pandering that politics and economics have become. There is no escape from this slow-motion economic nightmare we are all a part of, which will pick up speed without warning and impact everyone once again. Chris, I'd like to urge all of our listeners to sign up for my email list at conquerchange.com. Several years ago, I hosted a series of teleseminars on gold and the economy, and will soon begin hosting a series of free Conquer Change webinars. And if any of our listeners are ever involved in bringing in keynote speakers or entertainment for their companies or professional organizations, please visit my companion website at robertian.com. And until next time, this is Robert Ian, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at Conquer Change. Thanks, Chris.